Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hey, locksmiths. Friend of the show and our Check the Locks Halloween episode co-host Jessica Gomez has written a dark thriller novel called Pieces of You. This creepy but emotional tale of grief, abduction, and murder is Mayor of Easttown meets Psycho, and it's perfect for all of you who love crime stories.
Nora Aberdeen, a grieving college dropout, ventures to a deteriorating small town to meet a blind date. On her drive home, a bloody young woman darts in front of her car, causing Nora to veer off the road and headfirst into a tree. When Nora regains consciousness, the woman is gone. Nora's estranged uncle, a sheriff's deputy, comes calling with information about a growing list of young women turning up dead in the small town of Woodbridge, including the woman who caused Nora's accident. The local police have written the women off as drug overdoses, but suspicious circumstances and the department's ineptitude point to something more nefarious. Unsure if she can trust the only family she has left, Nora tries to uncover the secrets of the missing young women and her connection to them, when a strange motive unfurls. Will Nora uncover the truth before the killer claims another victim?
Pieces of You by Jessica Gomez releases October 1st. Pre-order as a hardcover, paperback, or ebook online at Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, bookshop.org, or ask your local bookstore to order it for you. Sign up for Jessica's newsletter at writerjessicagomez.com and follow her on Instagram at writerjessicagomez for updates.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, as always, Olivia, my sleepy friend, I've missed you. We missed you last week for the short on time, but glad to have you back.
I'm back.
I was super happy to have you. And I am so sorry that I woke you up for this recording. For the listeners out there, we were getting ready to record. Olivia had a long night because of her cat last night and dozed off. So I had to call her to wake her up. So I apologize for interrupting your slumber. But other than being tired, how are you doing? How's your week been? Super happy to have you back.
I mean, I wouldn't miss it for the listeners. But, you know, I've been, I guess, asleep for probably a solid, I don't know, maybe an hour. 45 minutes. I don't really know. So I got my like morning voice going on. So just please ignore. But no, I'm doing good. I had a good weekend. My family was here. Dang cat kept me up all night meowing for no reason. And, you know, my sister's dog was here. So she gets a little all out of sorts when there's another dog in the house. So I can't really blame her, but I tried to take a nap earlier and it just didn't work out. Here we are. How are you? How was your weekend? I like
I'm
your
good.
New shirt you have on. It's, let me describe it to folks. It's purple and black tie-dye with a big old ghost Bucky on it.
Oh, yeah. This weekend, and again, thank you for shaking off the sleep and coming up to your spare room to do the recording. I feel bad because I just imagine you were sawing logs and all of a sudden your phone just started going off.
Yeah, I felt startled. When you get startled awake, but it's kind of like, I guess I wasn't really, I was asleep, but I knew I had to be up, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, I'm awake. We're here.
Yeah.
We're
going. So, but we had a good weekend. A friend of ours has a daughter with Down syndrome, and she is just my like favorite little human outside of Millie. Like, just she makes me smile so big, and we're buddies. And every year in Louisville, they do the Kindness Warriors Walk that raises money for Down syndrome awareness and resources that, you know, people who deal with that need. And so we got to go. We got up at, I got up at 3:45 on Saturday morning, and we made like the 2.5, they're an hour ahead. So we made like the 2.5 hour drive to get there by 8. And then we walked, and then we went to lunch afterward, and then took the kids to Build-A-Bear. So it was a lot of fun. Then we had to get in the car, and because of traffic, we had to make the 3-hour and 45-minute drive back. So it was a pretty eventful Saturday. But on the way, there was a Buc-ee's. And I don't know about any of the listeners, but if y'all have kids, I swear I could get away with never taking Millie to Disneyland and taking her to Buc-ee's and being like, this is Disney. And she'd be like, oh, okay, I've been there. I've done it. So every time we've gone, like Buc-ee has been out, the guy in the suit, she ran up, gave him a hug. He picked her up and was swinging her around and pictures. Yeah, took pictures with her and like was pretending to eat her head because it's, you know, it's a big beaver costume. But I got a really cool shirt. It's a Halloween shirt. And Millie got a $15 Buc-ee the Beaver tumbler. So
she better drink out of that every day.
Oh, yeah. I told Kara this might be my new look is just like gas station T-shirts. So, you know, if y'all have any suggestions, if there's like a Murphy or an Exxon that has got some cool swag, let me know. I'll stop by. But it was a good weekend. And then today we just kind of hung out. I did some stuff for the podcast and we did dinner with Kara's family and played some games and stuff. So all in all, it's pretty good. So, good. Yeah, but I'm super happy to be here. I'm super happy to have you back. You know, our short on time last week was our very first episode of October, and you know how I am when it comes to October. It's my
spooky season.
Oh, dude, it's the best month of the entire year. I got Halloween. I got my kid's birthday. There's scary movies on all the time. And so I figured if you're cool with it, I could kind of keep up the theme for this week's episode and do a little bit of a story that's based around, it's actually on Halloween Day. And I never heard of it, and I am surprised because it's seems like it was a huge case at the time. So I'd definitely be interested to see like if it sounds familiar to you, our listeners, and get your feedback on it.
All right. Well, why don't we just start with the episode?
All right, let's do it. This week, we are headed to Oak Harbor, Ohio on Sunday, October 31st, 2010, Halloween Day. Devin Griffin had arrived at his family's home after singing in his Sunday morning church service. Devin's parents had divorced. His 46-year-old mother, Susan Lisk, had remarried and now lived with her second husband, 53-year-old William Lisk, but family and friends called him Bill. Susan had graduated from Oak Harbor High School before earning an associate's degree from Terra Community College. In 2010, she was working as the office manager for Northwest Ohio's Carpenters Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committee. Bill was a United States Air Force veteran who was now working as a front-end loader for waste management. Devin, his mother, and his older brother, 23-year-old Derek, had moved in with Bill. And along with a stepfather, the boys had a new brother, 24-year-old Bill B.J. Lisk. Now, on this Halloween, Devin had returned home and went to his room to play video games. But by around 1:30 in the afternoon, he noticed something. The house was eerily quiet, and there was no reason for anyone to still be sleeping. He would normally hear his family moving about the home, so he left his room and headed downstairs to the master bedroom. When he opened the door, Devin saw his mother and stepfather still in bed, a maroon comforter pulled up over their heads. Devin called out to his mom, attempting to wake her up, but he received no response. So he walked around to the side of the bed where her leg was sticking out from under the covers. Devin jostled her, but still no response. As he continued to talk to his mom, attempting to wake her, he pulled back the comforter, but he was shocked at what he discovered. Susan's pillow was soaked with what appeared to be blood. Terrified, the 16-year-old tried to rationalize what he had found in his mind, originally thinking that maybe he was the victim of some kind of Halloween prank. But as he stared, taking in what he was seeing, he realized that this was absolutely no joke. Devin turned and ran from the home, tears running down his face. And once outside, he called his aunt, Lori Morse. Devin was shaken up as he described the scene that he had found, and Lori rushed to the Lisk home. When she arrived, she immediately called the authorities to report what had happened. Now, with the police on scene, they discovered the body of Bill Lisk in the bed next to Susan's. Both had been shot to death and blood splatter covered the walls. Bill was lying in a natural sleeping position, and he had been shot 5 times in the face and head. Susan had been shot 3 times, and her body was sprawled out awkwardly, suggesting that she may have been moved after she was murdered. She also had what appeared to be a defensive wound to her hand, and it would later be determined that Susan had been sexually assaulted either shortly before or shortly after her death. The wound seemed to be inflicted at close range by a small caliber firearm, and detectives believed a .22 caliber rifle was used. But sadly, Bill and Susan weren't the only victims. Upstairs, police found that Derek Griffin's bedroom door was locked, and when they knocked and didn't get a response, investigators kicked the door in, only to make another brutal discovery. There, lying in bed and facing the wall, was Derek's lifeless body. The coroner would later determine that he had died from blunt force trauma to the head. Now, while investigating the home, police discovered a bloody claw hammer in a closet that seemed to be consistent with the wounds that Derek had suffered. And along with the bodies, authorities found something else that stood out. It seemed that the couch had been fitted for someone to sleep on, and when interviewing Devin, they learned that it had been for his stepbrother, BJ Lisk. 24-year-old William B.J. Lisk seemed to have a troubled few years. In 2002, his father called the police because B.J. was threatening self-harm. At the time, the then 16-year-old was already on house arrest for a previous issue. When police arrived, B.J. became angry and attacked the responding officers. And because of this, the teen would be charged with assaulting a peace officer in the juvenile courts. And by 2004, things would only get worse. Lisk and his stepmother had gotten into an argument. During this, BJ hit Susan in the chest with a coffee mug before stealing her car keys. He would be charged with felonious assault and robbery. However, due to mental health issues, Lisk would be deemed incompetent to stand trial and the charges would later be dropped. But the relationship between BJ and Susan had been rocky from the start. After his parents' divorce, the teenager began acting out, skipping school and misbehaving. But when Bill married Susan in 2001, she attempted to bring order to the house, and BJ would continue to revolt, which led to a contentious relationship, even resulting in fistfights between Bill and his son. By 2004, the 18-year-old had been kicked out of the house for attempting to attack his stepmother as she showered. In 2006, because of BJ's mental health issues, Bill filed for guardianship over his son. Then, in 2007, BJ Lisk was hospitalized for schizoaffective disorder. Now, Bill loved his son and just wanted to see him do well. According to the guardianship paper, BJ would be okay for a while taking his medication, but at some point he would feel that he didn't need it anymore and stop taking it. And that would lead to BJ reverting back to drinking and smoking marijuana, and the whole cycle would start again. Bill believed that a group home would be the best option for his son, and BJ would eventually move into a halfway house in Sandusky. Bill would visit his son often, and over time it seemed that the relationship between BJ and his father had gotten better. But people close to Bill were cautious. Mark Gridell, a close friend of Bill's, had several conversations with the father about his son. Gridell was a neighbor, and he, along with others in the community, believed that BJ had tortured and killed their pets. In fact, Gridell had found his own dog shot twice with a .22 caliber rifle. But BJ was Bill's son, and it was hard for him to see anything but good in his child, even though he had been physically injured in fights with BJ. But Bill would always tell his friend the same thing. My son won't hurt us. And again, things were going better. So the week before the murders, Bill had taken some vacation time from work so that he and BJ could go hunting together.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
So before we go any further, Olivia, what are you thinking? What do you make of this case so far?
Okay, so right now, like, I feel like I know where this is going, but I also, just because of, you know, the podcast, but I don't really know if this is going to be like a mental illness type thing where he really is off his meds and I'm assuming, you know, kills his family. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know about this one yet. What are your thoughts? What when you were researching this case, like, I don't know that someone could really kill their family like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there have been cases like this before. One of the most famous ones, especially since we're, you know, kind of talking about this being related to Halloween and stuff like that. But was the Ronald DeFeo murders, the ones that, you know, kind of kicked off the Amityville Horror. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was another thing where, you know, obviously suffered from mental illness, claimed that, you know, the devil was telling him to do it and, you know, violently murdered his entire family, parents, siblings, everything like that in their home in the middle of the night. Right. So, you know, I definitely think, and especially, you know, having a loved one who has dealt with bipolar disorder and things of that nature, like there are some severe ups and downs, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, at one point you're in the best mood ever and everything's great. And it's like, hey, let's go do this. And I want to take you, let's go do this and we'll do that. And then, you know, the next minute it's like a crash and they can get violent. They can, you know, get super depressed, things of that nature. So it really I guess it wouldn't surprise me if it was, you know, actual mental illness. And especially with him having the history of, you know, the schizoaffective disorder and things of that nature. Like there's obviously something going on. I think the one thing in this story that I was like, this will get Olivia is when BJ attacked his stepmother in the shower, because yeah. We just talked about it extensively. And I was like, I don't know how I stumbled across this one, but I know this would get under Olivia's skin for sure.
I'm sure if you watched me while you were reading, I made a face. So I'm like, dang, in the shower. I'm telling you, that's where they get you. I got my squeegee ready and waiting.
Well, and it's also strange in this case, too, because like normally it's like you're home alone, right? So when you're home with your family, you know,
feel safe. You have that false sense of safety.
Yeah. And it's, you know, one of those things, too, where I can imagine being a teenager and your parents get divorced and it's already, you know, an emotional time for you, right? Like mm-hmm. Your hormones are going all over the place. Like your body's changing. Nobody's right about anything but you. And then all of a sudden this new person, you know, is in your life and trying to tell you how you need to act. And then you have mental illness on top of that. Yeah. Definitely seems like that could have exacerbated some of what was going on, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely triggering for that person. Well, let's keep going. I want to hear what the rest of this case has to offer.
All right, let's do it. Bill and BJ Lisk returned from their hunting trip on Saturday, October 30th, 2010. That evening, they met a few friends to hang out and drink a few beers. Mark Gridell happened to be in attendance. And according to Mark, everyone was having a good time. But he didn't notice Susan's son, Derek, at the get-together. But that was normal. Derek and BJ never really seemed to get along. Now, normally, Bill would pick up BJ from the halfway house and drop him back off. But because Bill had been drinking, he didn't think it was a good idea to make the drive back to Sandusky. So when the party ended at around midnight, he offered to make up the couch for BJ. Now, BJ sleeping over was very out of the norm. Remember, there have been several violent fights in the past, but again, Bill thought things were getting better with his son. So he offered BJ the sofa, and in the morning, Bill would bring him back to Sandusky. BJ agreed, and Bill and Susan Lisk went to sleep in their bedroom. But at around 6:30 in the morning on October 31st, Michelle Gridell, Mark's wife, woke to what sounded like gunshots. Now, going back to the beginning of this case, Devin Griffin had stayed at his father's on the 30th, but before he went to church to sing, he came home to grab a shirt for service at around 9:30 a.m., and he was surprised to find BJ Lisk in his home. According to an interview with detectives, BJ seemed happier than normal. Normally, his brother seemed down and gloomy, but on that morning, BJ seemed cheery and was far more talkative than normal. He asked Devin how he was doing and how long he would be staying, and Devin explained that he was just there to change a shirt. He was in and out of the home within 5 minutes. Now, after Devin left, BJ took his father's F-150 and drove back to the hunting cabin he and his father had spent the week at, stopping and getting a sandwich at a Subway along the drive. But once Devin returned to find the grisly crime scene, it didn't take investigators long to put the pieces together. And BJ Lisk would be arrested at the cabin in Carroll County. He was charged with the aggravated murder of Susan Lisk, Bill Lisk, and Derek Griffin. Now, upon his arrest, authorities searched Bill's stolen F-150, and inside, critical evidence was found, including blood and a .22 caliber rifle. Additionally, DNA testing would be done on the clothing that BJ was wearing at the time of his arrest, and results confirmed the findings of DNA from his father, stepmother, and stepbrother. But BJ Lisk would originally claim he was innocent. However, while in jail, Lisk had a conversation with his mother on a recorded line. And when she asked how he could commit such a heinous crime, Lisk responded, "I wasn't in my right mind," before telling his mother that he couldn't talk about it anymore. Following that phone call, he changed his plea to guilty. Now, Lisk would appear in court for his crimes in August of 2011. It was there that prosecutors laid out what they believed had happened. They claimed that BJ first killed his stepbrother Derek, beating him in the head with a hammer as to not wake his father and stepmother. Then, he headed down to the master bedroom where he would open fire on Bill before murdering and sexually assaulting Susan. BJ Lisk pleaded guilty to 3 counts of aggravated murder as part of a deal that would take the death penalty off the table. Additionally, firearms charges were also dropped. His sentencing would take place on September 15, 2011. During the hearing, the now 25-year-old Lisk addressed the court saying, "I love my dad very much, and it makes me sick every time I think about what I did. There won't be a day that goes by that I don't feel horrible for what I've done. It's all my fault, and I don't blame anyone but myself. I never intended for this to happen. It wasn't because of Sue or Derek or even my father. I believe it was an internal struggle with my mental illness." Now, Susan's sister, Lori Morse, who Devin called when he first found the bodies, also addressed the court, saying, "I will never get the events of that day out of my head. Our family has suffered an indescribable loss. BJ tore our hearts out and destroyed our family's happiness as we know it." Lori continued, "We feel such crippling grief. We will never hear Susan's laughter or see Derek smile again or feel a bear hug from Bill." Ottawa County Common Pleas Judge Bruce Winter sentenced William BJ Lisk to life in prison without the possibility of parole for all 3 murders. And he would be ordered to serve out his sentence in the Ross Correctional Institution of Chillicothe, Ohio. Now, 4 years after beginning his sentence, correctional officers at RCI would make a grim discovery. On March 31st, 2015, the now 29-year-old BJ Lisk was found dead inside of his cell at 11:25 p.m. There were no signs of foul play, and the wound seemed to be self-inflicted. So, Olivia, that's what I've got for you this week. What are your final thoughts? What are you thinking before we move into that deadbolt test?
This is just a sad one. You know, now that, you know, I'm doing something different in my career path, I'm spending more time with those that suffer from mental illness and specifically schizophrenia. And, you know, just seeing the difference in behavior when people are on their medications is huge. So I feel like this was probably something that potentially was just because he was not in his right mind, but also to brutally murder and sexually assault your stepmother, like, that's pretty bad. So it's hard to be like, yeah, I feel sorry for him. He has schizophrenia. He wasn't in his right mind. But, you know, I do think he had some remorse. And I hope that before he ended his life, he was able to forgive himself for what he had done. And it's just a tragedy all around. You know,
Devin seems to be the only one left from the family. And, you know, he lost a brother, a mother, a stepfather, and then now a stepbrother. So, like, he lost his entire family. And I just feel bad for the whole situation, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is one of those ones, and I know I feel like I've been using this terminology a lot, but it really does feel like the ripples to me, right? Where it's in one day, you know, you go to church, you're singing, it's Halloween, you're probably excited to either like pass out candy or, you know, even if you're older, Halloween is still an exciting day. Friends get together, stuff like that. You're probably looking forward to the holiday, and you come home and you find your family just brutally murdered. And in a second, it's like your whole life has changed forever. Like you said, I've lost my mother. I've lost my stepfather. I've lost my brother. I've lost now my stepbrother because he's, you know, going to be in prison forever and would eventually take his own life. But, you know, then I think about BJ's biological mother, who's now lost her son. And I think about Devin's biological father, who's now lost both of his kids. And, you know, even though they were divorced, you know, probably was still fond of his ex-wife, you know, like didn't see anything in the research that said it was, you know, a contentious thing or anything like that. But, you know, you've lost now the mother to your children, and Lori has lost her sister, and her parents have lost a child. So it's like this one act you see throughout these different families, just the like the ripple effect and the disruption that it caused and all the hurt and the grief. And, you know, it's again one of those things where I really hope that these people are able to seek out help and work through that, because I can imagine that the survivor's guilt is probably just so overwhelming, you know,
especially because Devin was there, you know.
Was lucky that he didn't attack him the same way that he had already attacked mm-hmm. his parents, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because by the time Devin came home at 9:30 in the morning, his family was dead.
This was already dead. Yeah.
And, you know, and for some reason he was just like, all right, have a good day. And like, let him go, mm-hmm. you know? So it's, I don't know. And then I think about the neighbors as well, who are like, hey man, something's up. And like, you need to be careful. And there is that aspect, you know, and I'm sure, you know, your parents would say the same thing about you, but it's like, as a parent, you always want to see the good in your child. You acknowledge mm-hmm. that, you know, hey, they went through a tough time or they're working through something. But I really do think, like, fundamentally in our core of who we are, like, we look at our children and say, like, I want to believe that inside of you is something good. And so you will maybe bend in places where you wouldn't for somebody else. It's just sad, you know, like, I want to know more about what was going through BJ's head that night. Like, what was it that night? Like, was it, mm-hmm. I finally have the opportunity to do this. You know, I know, per the research, like, he had been drinking that night, and you know, some of the defense attorneys were like, why was he ever allowed to drink? Why did anybody offer him a beer or anything like that, especially with the history of mental illness? So, you know, I found myself being like, I want to know more about this. Like, what was it? And it's just like the family. I think it's really sad because you'll never really get the answer to it, you know?
Never know. And it's just something that we just won't have the answers to. And so one thing I don't like about this podcast thing is that we never get all our questions answered. And I just feel bad for the whole thing. The whole situation is a tragedy.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of clicking in my head right now, but we really do try to choose cases that have a beginning, middle, and end so we can tell a complete story. Mm-hmm. But when you start thinking about all of the times that we've gone through this and been like, I just want to know more. You know what I mean? It feels counterproductive to the reason that we pick the cases that we do. But it's, you know, I don't know. It's just to see this entire family in just a matter of, you know, probably less than 20 minutes, you know, just be taken off the earth is devastating. So, I mean, if mm-hmm. we're talking deadbolt tests for something like this, where does the murder of the Lisk family fall on the test for you? What are you thinking?
I'm going to put this one at a 7. It's just, I don't know. This one just seems sad to me and not as scary or make me check my locks. But it's also like, this person is someone you've welcomed into your home. And it's almost like they were giving him a second chance by being like, yeah, you can crash on the couch. Like, no big deal. We've had our issues. You're working on your life for getting things back in order. Like, let me just let you have this one moment of trust. And then for him to brutally murder and attack his stepmom and his entire family is just devastating. What about you?
I'm very much in line with you. I'm going to go a little bit higher at an 8. And I think the reason for it is just, again, kind of like what you said, like, you know, I have friends who have, you know, fist fought their dad. I had a friend this weekend be like, ooh, this boy, you know, his son is going to be 3. And he's like, he's pushing my patience. And I know when he's 18, we're going to have a fight in the front yard to be like, who's the man of the house? I can already see. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I know that there are some relationships that are like that, but you don't ever expect that your child would turn on you like that. And so I think for me, just number one, the randomness of like, yes, we've gotten into arguments, but now we're at the point of murder, the level of escalation and the seemingly like coming out of nowhere. And again, just letting Devin live. I would be spending my whole life being like,
why me?
Why? Like, what was it about that morning that like, he just let me walk out of the door when he did all this terrible stuff to my family, you know?
Right.
So, and then again, there's the element of like this being your kid, this person that you brought into the world and you spent your entire life loving and supporting. And even though you've had your issues, like you have tried to show up and do what's best for them and have their back in so many ways. And then this is the person who ultimately takes your life. So, you know, again, not really necessarily worried about this happening to me or being the dynamic of my family in the future, but those elements definitely make it
higher on the deadbolt for sure.
Yeah. And it like, you know, having a wife who's a therapist, it's like, oh, well, thank God I know to look for signs, right? Like as my kid gets older, like keep an eye on it, you know, look for that behavior, get intervention quickly, you know, but if you don't know, you're just like, you know, my kid's going through a hard time. He's a teenager. So I don't know. I think for me that I'm going to put this right in an 8, but I think we do share a lot of commonality as far as like why it's unsettling.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, it was a good case. And I guess I got to keep with the Halloween trend this month.
You know, I'm liking it. And also, you know, Jessica Gomez is coming and she always brings some highly Halloween infused case as well. So I'm excited to see what we do. Now she has been very busy putting out an awesome book. And everything like that. So I don't know if she'll have time to research one, but at the very least, we will have her on to hang out with us for an episode, talk about the book, get into a case, because she's awesome. We love her very much.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that is where we fall on the deadbolt test for this week's episode. Olivia's putting it at a 7. I'm putting it at an 8. But as always, we have to turn to the listeners, the locksmiths. Where does the Lisk family massacre fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Check the Locks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, what in the gall darn heck are you doing? Come hang out with us. We would love to get to know you, be able to spend some time with you. It's awesome seeing people from all over the world kind of coming together, hang out in this one spot, talk about true crime and the cases and things like that. So we would love to have you as part of that community. If you need a cheat code, you can go in the description of the episode that you're listening to now, click the link, fill out a couple of questions. Boom. You're part of the family. Cannot wait to spend time with you. And Olivia, again, you know, this case definitely rough, going through it, just talking about kind of how sad it was and how many people are affected. You know, I love myself a good palate cleanser, something light to end on. And I think you may have a review for us to read this week. Is that true?
I do. I have a review this week from Eve and Daisy, and they said, I randomly binged some Mavs, loved Olivia, and found this podcast. Now I love John too and can't stop binging the podcast. Thank you both for an addicting true crime show. So thank you, Eve and Daisy.
Yeah, Eve and Daisy, thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. And on behalf of Olivia and myself, I feel like we can pretty confidently say we love you too. Thank you for listening and, you know, sharing your feedback. And we talk about it all the time, but these reviews, they really do help us out so much. They get us into other shows' recommendations. They help new listeners find the show. So the fact that you took time out of your day to do that, it really does mean a lot. And we'd love to get you some goodies out. So again, reach out to us. Instagram, Check the Locks Pod. You can find us on Twitter, Check the Locks. If you're in our Facebook group, you can send myself or Olivia a DM. We'll get back to you, get some information from you. We'd love to get you some stickers or something like that. So thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. And Olivia, if somebody wants to have their 5-star review read on the podcast, what's the best way to do that?
They need to go to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 of those stars, light them all up and leave us a little review and tell us what you think about our show.
And Olivia always says it best, so I don't have to. Apple Podcasts. Click those stars, leave the review. Again, if you need a cheat code, there is a link in the description of the episode that you're listening to right this very moment. So click it. Let us know what you think. You can also leave a Spotify comment. So if you listen on Spotify, you're like, I'm not messing around with Apple. Let us know what you think on Spotify. The cool thing is, again, we can respond to those, which is really cool. So feel free to leave us a Spotify comment. We would be happy to read those as well. You can also send us an email at contact@checkthelockspod.com. We would love to get your feedback directly into our inbox. And don't forget, you can leave us a voicemail. Olivia, I know you love the voicemails.
I do love the voicemails.
That is hands down Olivia's favorite thing. So if you would like to leave a voicemail so we can hear from you, you can give us a call. If you're in the United States, give us a call at 615-920-9393. Again, that is 615-920-9393. Also, and I just realized that I've been forgetting to tell people this, but if you live out of the country, you can still leave us a voicemail. Just go to checkthelockspod.com, click the little microphone button. You can leave us a voicemail there as well. And again, we would love to play them on the show. And as always, if you want to financially support the show, you like what we do, want to help us keep the lights on, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. We got a lot of great features, exclusive benefits, stickers, coffee mugs, stuff you can only get for being a patron. Plus, you get the episodes ad-free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate commercials, Patreon is the way to go. So again, if you really like what we do, you know, podcasting ain't cheap. Any support helps. That's patreon.com/checkthelocks. Get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening and hanging out with us, sharing what we do with your friends and family, the people who are important to you, means just as much, if not more. Again, it is all about the growth, finding new listeners, building our community. And that happens when you share the show with people who are important to you. So again, if you're sharing those links, telling people to listen, just know that we appreciate that more than we could ever tell you. That is all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure you are subscribed to Check the Locks in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to
check the locks.
See you next week.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.